We're holding on the last line of Nun Omid Beis. We learned in the Mishnah Ein Metzia Machilas Peiris that when it comes to certain kinds of debts, then we said you can't collect from Nechasim Meshubadim, only from Nechasim Nechorim, property that actually belongs to the person that you want to collect from at the time rather than that he previously sold. So we said a few cases. Number one is Machilas Peiris of the Shvach HaKos, which would be a case where Reuven had a field, Shimon stole it from him, and sold the field to Levi. We're talking about Levi didn't know at the time that it was stolen. If he did, then there's other dinim. Anyway, he made improvements to the field and produced payers, whatever. Eventually, Reuven wants his field back, so he gets that back from Levi. Now Levi goes to Shimon to demand reimbursement. So you have a difference between the actual value of the land itself, where that he can collect even from Mishabodim of Shimon, meaning property that Shimon had previously sold to Yehuda or whoever, versus the Peiros and the Shvach Karkois, the value of the improvements to the land, that he can collect only from Bnei Chorin. We said also Mazon Ishavah Bonis, also money for the feeding of the wife or the daughters, meaning after a person passes away, after a man passes away, that his wife, his Almona, is still entitled to Mazonis until she collects a ksuba or until she remarries. And his daughters until they become bogrus or get married. Anyway, all those things the Mishnah had said you can collect only from nechasim bnei chorin because of tikkun olam. So we said, what exactly is it about these things that makes them that you can't collect them from nechasim meshubadim? So Ula had said the reason is because ein ksuvin, none of them are written down. So therefore, in effect, they're just a milval peh, and we know the rule is a milval peh you can't collect from meshubadim. Then we said Rav Chanina gave a different reason, because they're not fixed in value. At least with the field, you know how much it's worth, but the other things, the peiros and the shvach kalkois and so forth, you never know. So now the Gemara says, so now we have a question regarding Rav Chanina's opinion when he says ktsuvin. Ktsuvin uch suvin boy, would he say in order to collect from the chasim mishabodim, it needs to be ktsuvin fixed in value, and that it's written down, or would it be enough if it's fixed in value, even if it's not written down, even if it's a milval peh, he would still, but it's a fixed amount, he would allow you to collect from Nechasim Meshubadim. So Rashi says that he might hold that. Tosfos says no. I mean, there's a clear Mishnah in Baba Basra that says that a milval pay you can collect only from Nechasim Bnei Chorin. So Tosfos says, okay, we're not talking about a milval. We're talking about other kinds of things over here. The point is, Tosfos says, when a person borrows money, often they do it in private. That is why, unless there's a shtar. Once there's a shtar, then there's a koil, and then other people know to look out, and before they buy property from him, be aware that there's a shibud on him. But when it comes to these other kinds of responsibilities, the ones that we mentioned in the Mishnah, and some other ones that we're going to talk about in the Gemara, there we might say those kinds of things, sales of fields, marriages, and whatever are usually done in public. And therefore maybe we could say Rav Chanina would hold that even if they're not written, as long as they're ktsuvim, as long as they're known, there's enough of a koil for them and it would work. So what is it? So toshma, so let's try to prove. De itmar, we have a discussion of Amiroyim on a case as follows. Misha mes v'hiniach shtei bonis, uben. A person died and he left two daughters and one son. Now, of course, we know the son is going to yarshin, the daughters will not, as we know from this week's parasha. But we did learn in Ksubas that there is one thing, the daughters are entitled from the Yerusha, they're entitled to a percentage of it, which they're going to use for what the Gemara calls parnosa, namely that they're going to use that for towards their eventual wedding expenses. Right now, they're still young girls, they haven't gotten married yet. Eventually, they're going to need to get married, so you have a certain amount of the estate earmarked for them. By default, we learned over there in the Gemara, the default is 10% of the nechasim, unless the father said otherwise, or unless we know that he's more generous or stingy or whatever, but basically the Gemara often refers to it as a tenth because that's the default amount. Anyway, the kodmah had shown him not la isu nechasim. In this case, then what happened was the older girl went and took her isu nechasim, her one tenth for parnasa that she can use towards her wedding expenses and her nan or whatever. So besides the fact, in other words, Rashi explains, they're also entitled to mezonos up until that point. We're not counting that. We're talking about that in addition, she took her 10% that she's going to use for this parnasa, for wedding and nadin expenses. Velohi speaker shnia ligvois. The second one did not have the chance to collect her 10% yet. Adjim mes haben before the son dies. Now, once the son dies, if he doesn't have any children of his own, then the Yerusha goes to his sisters. So now what happens is, so let's consider. So the son had Yaushin 100% of the estate. His sister, so we're saying at some point, the older sister took out 10%. That leaves now 90% of the estate. So what do we say? Do we say then that we first earmark 10% for the younger daughter, and that'll leave 80%, and then the two daughters split what's left equally, so each of them ends up with 40% of the original estate? Or do we say that not? Do we say the first one got her 10%? Fine, that's a done deal, but now we have 90 left, and they split it evenly, 45-45. So, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shnia Vitra. So Rabbi Yochanan says, yeah, the second possibility. The younger girl has forfeited her 10%. We don't say first let her take her 10%, then we split everything else evenly, because the whole reason behind the 10% is that she should have parnasa, so she should have assets to be able to go into her marriage with. Now she has assets because she and her sister are jointly inheriting a lot more of the property. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says the first one already got her isur, good for her. The second one doesn't get an isur as well. And v'omalei Rav Chanina. So when Rabbi Yochanan says this, Rav Chanina says to him, why would that be? Gdoila mizu omra. Didn't the Chachamim say an even greater case, an even bigger chiddush? What if the brother had sold the nechasim? We say motzien la parnasa ve'en motzien la mezonos. We said that we can take away from the buyers to take for that isur. So even though we said in our Mishnah you don't take from mezonos from nechasim b'shabadim, but parnasa we do. So if the brother had sold, let's say 100% of the estate, we would still be entitled. Each girl, when it's time for her to get married, would be entitled to go to those lakuchos and take 10% away from them to be able to pay for her wedding. So we do that. The ein motzien la mezonos. We don't now. Even though it's true, we don't do that as far as mezonos. So you're telling me in a case like what you described involving the two sisters and the one brother, you're saying the second one forfeited her 10% just because she didn't have a chance to collect it yet? We see that a shibud that of other people is even stronger than her right is even stronger than that, and we still say that she doesn't lose her 10%. So why should she lose her 10% now? So that's Rav Chanina's argument to Rav Yochanan. In fact, Tosfos points out that Gemara in Ksubas discusses and says that Rav Yochanan eventually accepted Rav Chanina's argument. In any case, here we're focusing on Rav Chanina's opinion. So now let's consider. Now consider this parnasa, this 10%, is a fixed amount because we know it's 10% of the estate. It's not written down because there's no shtar anywhere where it's written down that he gives her 10%. It's just a tnai based in. And Rav Chanina is telling us the din is that she would take it out from the lakuchas. So you see, therefore, that yes, you can collect nechos, according to Rav Chanina, you can collect for nechos and mishabadim even from something that's not written, as long as it's serving, as long as it's fixed in value. The Ritva, by the way, brings up a point. Now, we learned yesterday that a takonas based in is that we talked about mazana isha v'habonis. We said it's considered as though it's written down, and Ula, to explain his opinion, had to say it's considered written down, but not as far as nechassim v'shabadim. When the Chachamim formulated the takana to begin with, they didn't say that you can collect from mazana isha v'habonis from nechassim v'shabadim. So over here, why is the Gemara saying it's not written, given that it's a Tanai based in to give her the Isu Nechosim, to give her the Parnosa, then it should be considered as though it's written down. And he says, because we learned in Ksubas that here the father does have the ability before he passes away to override that. Now, when it comes to Mazin Ishav Abonis, he can't do that. He can't say before he dies, I don't want my wife to be supported out of my estate, or I don't want my daughters to be supported out of my estate. Because it's part of the Tanoi Ksuba that his estate has to support them as long as there's money available. But he does have the option before he passes away to say, I don't want Parnosa to be given to my daughters. Let them find their own wedding expenses and their own Nadin and whatever. And therefore, we can't consider it a written, we can't consider it as though it was written, as though it was a Tanai based in, since he has the ability to override it. Anyway. The point is that we see that, the question was whether Rav Chanina would require to collect from Nechassim Shabbatim, would he require that something is written as well as Ksuvin Uchsuvin, it has to be fixed in value as well as written down, or is it enough for it to be Ksuvin, fixed in value? Well, here by the Isu Nechassim, it's exactly that, it's fixed in value, but not written, and he's saying you can collect from Nechassim Shabbatim. So that would answer the question. The answer is not necessarily. Shiny Parnosa, the case of Parnosa is different. Kibin de Isla Kola, because there is a coil for it. Everybody knows that the guy passed away and that his daughters eventually are going to get the Isu Nechosim because they're not married yet. So therefore, Commander Ksiva Dami, so it can be considered for this purpose as though it was written. That wouldn't necessarily show in other cases where you don't have such a coil that it would work when it's not actually written. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Masiv Rav Huna bar Manoach. Rav Huna bar Manoach has a question to contradict Ula this time. The question is going to be. Now we have a case we learned in Masechet Ksubos. You have a case where a woman was previously married. She has a daughter from a previous marriage. Now she's getting married. So she makes a deal with her husband, but she makes a deal with her husband before they get married that he's going to support her daughter for 5 years. Then the Mishnah goes on to describe what happens now if that husband, so at one time years back, she was married to Reuven and had a daughter with him. Reuven died, and now she goes and marries Shimon. So before the marriage, she tells Shimon, I want you to agree that you're going to support my daughter, which is your stepdaughter, for the next 5 years. And Shimon agrees. Then during the 5 years, she and Shimon get divorced, and she goes and marries Levi. She makes the same deal with Levi. So the Mishnah earlier in the Mishnah, which is not quoted here in the Gemara, says that now both of them she can hold both of them to that obligation. What happens is one of them provides her with actual food and the other one provides her with the equivalent amount of money. So she's double dipping, basically. She's getting to collect from both Shimon and Levi because that was the deal. Then the Mishnah continues the part that we quote over here in the Gemara, Mesu, if Shimon and Levi die during the 5 years, their own daughters, meaning whatever daughters she herself had with Shimon or with Levi, they get their mizonis out of nechosim nechorin, because as we said in our Mishnah, you don't collect from mizonis from nechosim mishabadim. She, this daughter from the first marriage, is able to collect even from Nechassim Shabbatim, because she's considered like a Bala Schoiv. In effect, they owe her money because of this condition. So we see there is an example, in other words, of Ksuvin, but not Ksuvin. It's a fixed amount. We know that it's 5 years worth of mizonis, and we can at least get an approximate value of how much that would be. At least we can get a ballpark figure, even if we don't know down to the last dollar. On the other hand, it's not ksuvin because it wasn't written bepashtos, it wasn't written down anywhere. And therefore, so we're saying that she can collect from the chosim shabbatim. So what are you telling me then? So what are you telling me then, Ula, that when it's not suvin, then you can't collect from the chosim shabbatim? And the question would also be on the second possibility of we could also use this to prove that between the two possibilities we said of what Rav Chanina says, that apparently as long as it's suvin, as long as it's fixed in value, then that's good enough to collect from the chosim shabbatim, even if it's not written. But in any case, it would contradict Ula. The answer is no, because Hoch Maiskin and Bishakonu Miyodai. What we're talking about over here is when she made this deal with Shimon, and later on when she made the deal with Levi, then they made a kinyan on it. And when a kinyan is made, Rashi adds that usually it's meant to be written down. So usually when a kinyan is made, we assume that afterwards a shtar will be written to that effect. Tosfa says that no, actually, what it means is that a kinyan would be even stronger than writing. Earlier, and in the previous part of the Gemara, Tosfa explained that certain kinds of obligations, you can't really, even if you write them down, because the actual obligation doesn't exist yet, then therefore it's meaningless to write it down. Tosfa mentions it over there in connection, for example, with Shevach. You do have when you sell a field, for example, you may write into the shtar that I'm responsible for the value of the field itself to reimburse you if necessary, as well as the shevach and so forth. But given that shevach, that improvement in value, doesn't exist yet, then Tosfa says whether you're writing it down is meaningless. The same way over here, we would be saying that if the Gemara is going to ask now why wouldn't we make a kinyan as far as the daughters that she has with Shimon or the daughters that she has with Levi? So Tosfos is saying that since those daughters don't exist yet, then even if they did make a kinyan, it would be meaningless to write it down. But the point is that a kinyan is stronger than writing. So therefore, if writing it down helps as far as Ula, if writing it down helps according to Ula's opinion to allow to collect from the chosim shabbatim, then that's why there was a kinyan over here, and it's even stronger than writing there because there's a curl to it, Papashtos, and therefore that would be why you can collect for the stepdaughter from the chosim shabbatim. So they want to ask you, hachi bonus nami. Well, then the same thing. Why don't we assume that the daughter was as well? Why don't we assume by the same token, this woman has daughters with Shimon or has daughters with Levi. Why are we saying that they can collect only from the Chosim Bnei Chorin? If a kinyan was made, then you would make a kinyan for them also. And the answer is no. The case would be that they made a kinyan regarding the stepdaughter, but not as far as she didn't make a kinyan as far as the daughters that she's going to have with her new husband. Well, they might ask my Poska. So why are you saying that so definitively? What is it a given like that that a person that is it a given like that that they're gonna make that she's gonna make a kinyan for the support of her daughter only from her first marriage and not for her daughters from her second or third marriages? What's the logic? And the answer is because there's a big difference. Bas ishtei da'avoi b'shas kinyan, because the stepdaughter, the daughter from the first marriage who exists, she's already alive at the time of the kinyan, mahani lo kinyan, therefore kinyan is effective on her behalf. Bito da'avoi b'shas kinyan, as opposed to the daughters of Shimon or the daughters of Levi, they weren't yet born because she's first marrying Shimon or she's first marrying Levi now, so the daughters don't even exist yet. So therefore, a kinyan would not be effective on her behalf because you can't make a kinyan on behalf of somebody who doesn't exist yet. And as Tosfos points out earlier, even if you did make such a kinyan, writing it down would be meaningless. So therefore, yes, we can assume that a kinyan was made and written down, or that it doesn't even need to be written down as the case may be, on behalf of the stepdaughter, but not on behalf of the younger daughters. But the Gemara doesn't like that answer because Miloya skin and Dahaba Tavayo Bashas Kinyan, because after all, couldn't you equally construct the case and say that both of them exist at the time of the Kinyan? The Hefi Domi de Gershav Adra, the case would be where he divorced her and remarried her. So let's say, so now this woman was originally married to Reuben, she has a daughter with him. Now she marries Shimon. Fine, at the time, of course, she doesn't have any daughters with Shimon. Later on, they have a daughter. Then she divorces Shimon. Then Shimon divorces her. Then they get remarried. By that time, the daughter already exists. So why should we assume why when she's remarrying Shimon? Let's say the first time around, she hadn't made any deal with him as far as her daughter from her first marriage. Now, when they're remarrying, she says, as one of the conditions, I'll remarry you on condition that you're willing to support my daughter from my first marriage, as well as our daughter from our first marriage for the next 5 years. And let's make a kinyan on that. So in that case, you could very well have that both girls are exist at the time, and a kinyan is made regarding both of them. And yet the Mishnah is saying as a blanket statement that the daughter of Shimon is only going to collect from Nechosim Bnei Chorin and for her Mazonis if Shimon passes away, whereas the daughter from the previous marriage is going to be able to collect from Nechosim Shabbatim. So why? So that seems to contradict Ullah, because there we don't necessarily, there's no particular reason to say that one of them is written and the other one is not. So the Gemara says, you're right. We have to say it differently. Ella, Bito de Bitnai based in Ka'ocha, the answer is Shimon's own daughter, when she's eating, when she's getting mezonos after her father passes away, she from the estate, she's getting based on Tnai Bastin, because one of the Tnai Bastin is that of the Ksuba is that the father's estate will continue to support the daughter after he passes away until she gets married or until she becomes a Bergeris. So therefore, since she's eating based on a Tnai Bastin, Loi Mahani Lo Kinyan, therefore Kinyan is not effective for her. Because in other words, so even if Rashi says, even if they made a kinyan from him, that Rashi says on the next piece, whatever. Right now, the Gemara is assuming that because there's a Tanai based in, therefore kinyan doesn't really help anything. That doesn't really add anything. It doesn't really add anything to be mischayev for it again. You can't say a kinyan would be where a person is not yet chayev in something and he's taking on a kinyan. If he's already chayev in Tanai based in, on the face of it, a kinyan is meaningless. And therefore, the Gemara is assuming that therefore you can't make a kinyan on it. So because there's already a Tanai based in. Bas Ishte, the Lab Tanai based in Kochla, whereas the daughter of his wife from her first marriage, there's no Tanai based in over there. It's strictly an agreement that they made between themselves. Therefore, Mahani Lo Kinyan, therefore Kinyan is effective for her. So we would assume, in other words, that that's the difference. But the Gemara says, what's the logic for Chimigra Gora? What's the logic? Because there's a Tanai based in, therefore she should lose out. Fine, you don't need a kinyan when there's a Tanai based in effect. Wouldn't hurt to make a kinyan, would it? So why should we assume that a kinyan was made? And again, as we said before in the Gemara, you could also have the scenario where the daughter already exists, namely that she was married to Shimon, divorced him, and now is remarrying him. So why shouldn't we assume that a kinyan could be effective for her as well? Ella, no, we have to answer, Bita, Kivin de Mitnai based in Ka'ochla, the answer is his own daughter, because she's eating based on a Tanai based in, therefore, Rashi says, therefore, he's very concerned to make sure that it actually takes place. So therefore, when they make a Kenyan, Emot Surori Atpasa, we have to consider, maybe he already gave her a bundle of money at the time that she can use she's not able to collect from any place else, that she can use this as a backup to be able to get her mazonis. So therefore, since we have reason to think that might be the case, therefore, in other words, there's less of a coil that there's a shibud over here, because he may have already paid off the shibud, and therefore she can collect only from Nechasim Bnei Chorin after he passes away. As opposed to Bas Ishtoi, precisely because there's no Tanai based in, therefore he's not necessarily going to do this Tzrori Atpasa. Therefore, so yet, and if we're talking about, again, to explain what Ullah was saying before, we're saying Bishkonu Miyadu, you made a Kinyan from him. So therefore, but just because there was a Kinyan doesn't mean, therefore, that Tzrori Atpasa, that he gave her a bundle of money, therefore, when she eventually wants to collect her Mazonis, she'll be able to collect it from Nechasim Shabadim. Because of the king.
Even if he gave a bundle of money, it would be for her, not for the Lord.
Well, that's what we're talking about. In other words, we're saying that the stepdaughter, he wouldn't have given a bundle of money like that. He would have made a kinyan and rely on the kinyan, basically. But when it comes to his own daughter, because there's a tanai based in, therefore he would do the sorority aksa. Tosfos points out that for certain purposes in halacha, we do say that you don't give a katana sorority. But for this case, as far as preventing her from collecting from the chosim shabadim, that we still have to take that into consideration and not allow her to collect from Nechasim Shabadim on the basis that he might have given her tzurari.
He gave it to the mother, he gave it to her.
Well, maybe he gave it to the mother, maybe he gave it to her, whatever. The point it could be, and Tosfos apparently is assuming that he gave it to her directly. But the point is that even as far as Nechasim Shabadim, we need a higher standard to be able to take away from them, and therefore tzurari apasa would be a good counter argument to say that she can't collect from them.
What does that make a difference when you give it to the stepdaughter if it's for the purpose of Mazonis or for her?
Or for Parnassa? No, Pashtus, we're talking about for Mazonis. But again, we're saying he's not giving to the stepdaughter. That's why when it comes to her Mazonis, she can collect from Nechasim Shabbat. And Parnassa, we said at the top of the Amud, if any of them can collect from Nechasim, from Nechasim Shabbat. From Nechasim Shabbatim, we said Parnasa, because we said over there that, Rav Chanina had said that because it's Ketsuvin, we said because it's fixed in value, and we said maybe since it's also, there's a coil for it, so it's considered as though it's written, and maybe even Ula would agree to that, and therefore he would also say maybe that you could take for Parnasa from Nechasim Shabbatim. But if you can take from Nechasim Shabbatim, for sure you can take from B'nai Chorin. Mishabbatim means that you take them from something that was sold to somebody else, all the more so you can take from B'nai Chorin, sure. We said in the Mishnah anyway, you can't collect from the Shabbatim where there are B'nai Chorin available. So in that case, then if there's B'nai Chorin available, they're always going to go for that first, anyway. So in any case, from that Mishnah in Ksubas, we don't have a proof one way or the other against Ula. You could say that the Mishnah is talking about where it was not written down, and then you have a question on Ula because you're collecting from Nechasim Shabbatim, even though it wasn't written down. But you could equally well say that there was a Kinyan involved, and the Kinyan is going to be written down according to Rashi, or it's even stronger than writing down according to Tosfos, and therefore Ula would allow that to be collected from Nechasim Shabbatim.
And a Kinyan, the one that has a
coil? A Kinyan has a coil, yeah. That's Tosfos makes that point. In other words, they don't say in exactly those words, but yeah, so that's the thing. Rashi actually says a kinyan stam kinyan l'ksiva oimid. Rashi says when you make a kinyan, by default we assume it's going to be written down. And Tosfos says even if it's not written down, and even if writing it down is not relevant, nevertheless it's still considered stronger than writing. Tosfos doesn't spell out why, but the pashtus because there's a coil to it.
Done bezline
stands,
done privately.
Yeah, if people make a kinyan, it's usually done, and it has to be done in front of Adim, for example. So yeah, okay. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring a proof again about this matter, about this machlokas of Ula and Rav Chanina, about when you can collect from Nechasim Shabbatim and not. So Toshma, Omer Rav Nosson, a Braisa says Rav Nosson says Emasai. When do we say that you can't collect for now? Now we're going to talk about Peiros. And Shevach, again, we said in the Mishnah, you have the case where Reuven had a field, which Shimon stole from him and sold to Levi. And we're saying eventually Reuven comes and takes back his field from Levi. And then Levi goes to Shimon for reimbursement. So we said in the Mishnah that the value of the land itself, he can collect from Shimon, even from Shimon's Meshubadim, meaning that he'll go to Yehuda, who bought previously land from Shimon, and take that away from him to satisfy the debt. And then Yehuda will have to go after Shimon to get reimbursed. Anyway, when would that apply? So that's as far as the karka itself, but not as far as the shvach and the peiros, not as far as the improvements in value that Levi put into the land, or the peiros that he got out of it, all of which he's returning to Reuven. So we said those he can collect only from the chasim b'nei chorin. So the Braisa says, Amar Rav Nosson, Emasai, when does that apply, that distinction between the actual value of the field and the shevach is v'zman shekodem mikochish osheni v'shvachish orishin. Where the second one bought the property before the first one improved it. The first one means Levi, who bought the stolen field from Shimon. The second one means Yehuda, who had bought other property from Shimon. So in other words, what happens is Rav Nosson is saying, if Yehuda had brought property from Shimon, and later on, the field that Shimon had sold to Levi, the stolen field, Levi improved it, that would be when we'd say that when Levi wants to collect on the value of the field, he can collect from he can collect the value of the field itself from Nechasim v'Shabadim. So for that, he can go to Yehuda, but to collect for the Shevach, he can collect only from Shimon directly, only from Nechasim v'Nechorim.
Shimon
is the one who stole it and sold it to him. Avo kadim shvachei sharishin lemekachei sharsheni. But Reb Nosson says, if Levi had improved the property before Yehuda ever bought any property from Shimon, meaning that at the time when he bought from Shimon, the field that Levi bought was already improved, and everybody knows that it was sold by Achrayus. So therefore, everybody knows that if there's a problem with the field, if it gets taken away from Levi, then he's going to go to Shimon to demand reimbursement. So then, Reb Nosson says, goyim nechosim b'shabadim, then Levi would be able to collect even from nechosim b'shabadim for the Shevach. So now he would actually be able to go to Yehuda and tell him not only the original value of the field, not only the $100 that I paid Shimon for the field, but also the extra $20 that I improved it in value, I want you to pay all of me that, and then you will go to Shimon and you get reimbursed from him. So Alma Mishum Bele Kodim Hu. So we see that. So now the question really is on both Ula and Rav Chanina. Ula is saying that you can't collect from Nechasim v'Shabadim unless it's written. Rav Chanina is saying no, you can't collect from Nechasim v'Shabadim where it's not Ketsuvin, where it's not fixed in value. And we ask whether he means that or whether he means Ketsuvin uktsuvin, uktsuvin uktsuvin, that it's fixed as well as written or just Ketsuvin. But here we have that Reb Nosson is telling us that it has nothing to do with whether it's written or whether it's fixed in value. It just has to do with what the order of things were. As long as the later field was sold after the shvach was accomplished, then you can collect from Nechasim v'Shabadim. Now, even though the shvach, the dollar value of the shvach is not written in the shtar, and it can't be because it didn't exist at the time. And that's Tosfos says earlier that even if you were to write Rashi and Tosfos both say earlier, even if you were to write in the shtar, and you usually do, that I'm selling you the field and all its future shvach and whatever. But the fact is, right now that amount doesn't exist, so it's not suvin. It can't really be written in a meaningful way in the shtar. It's certainly not suvin because depending how much effort he puts into it, the value of the field is going to go up accordingly. So, and we still see Reb Nosson is saying that you can collect from the Chasim v'Shabadim. So it's a question on both Ula and Reb Chanina. So the Gemara answer is Tanoim. As a matter of fact, the answer is it's a Machloikas Tanoim, and in particular, Reb Chanina, we can find goes according to one Tanya. The Tanya we learn in a Braisa. That part of the Braisa is just restating what it said in the Mishnah. But the Braisa continues, "L'fisha in ksuvin," because it's not written. Well, therefore, so therefore, that would fit with what Ula is saying. But Rabbi Yossi says, "Where is the tikkun olam in that?" What does it have to do with whether it's written or not? There's a different reason. It's not fixed in value, and therefore the lekeach wouldn't know how much we're talking about, and therefore, in other words, he would say you don't really need a special takana for that. So we see, in other words, therefore, that Ula and Reb Chanina are basically following the argument of the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi. Now Tosfos points out that if we follow Rashi's understanding of how we just explained Reb Nosson's opinion, then it would come out that Reb Nosson is not following either opinion. Now, fine, Reb Nosson is a Tana as well. He's entitled to argue with the Chachamim and with Reb Yossi. But if the Gemara is saying Tanoihi, it sounds like the Gemara is trying to say that Reb Nosson's opinion itself will fit within the opinion of one of the two Tanoim. So Tosfos answers that by saying, like this, Rashi had explained that the question was on both Ula and Reb Chanina. Ula, who said you need Ksuvin, and Reb Chanina, who said you need Ksuvin, on the face of it, Reb Nosson is saying you don't need either one as long as you have that the sale of the other field took place later on. Now, Tosfos says that no. What we wanted to do with this question from Rav Nosson, we wanted to say that the question is strictly on Ula. As far as Rav Chanina, we would see the answer is as long as it's Ksuvin, as long as it's fixed in value, then it doesn't matter whether it's Ksuvin. Because once the Shvach has already been created, then it's Ksuvin. We know the dollar value of it. It's just not Ksuvin. It's not written down. So, and wouldn't that be good enough? And so the answer is that we see that Rabbi Yossi says that it doesn't matter whether it's suvin or not. Rabbi Yossi is saying as long as it's in suvin, then you can't collect from the Chosim Shabbatim, implies that if it is suvin, you could. That would fit with Rabbi Nosson's opinion, and therefore you only have the two possibilities, the Chachamim versus Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Nosson. Tosfos also explains that when we say that when Rabbi Yossi says v'chim ma tikuna olam yesh bazeh v'aloi ein ktsuvin, so Rashi says, in other words, Rabbi Yossi's point is because it's not ktsuvin, never mind tikun olam, just on the basis of that it's not ktsuvin and that it's not written, that just on the basis that it's not ktsuvin, you can't collect from the chosim shabbatim. Tosfos says a little differently. You're saying that the Tikkun Olam is based on writing it. What's the difference? Even if it was written, it's ain't ktsuvin, and you need ktsuvin in order to be able to collect from the Chosim Shabbatim. So, according to Rav Chanina, now we're saying according to Rav Yossi. Usually, when you have a machlokas Rav Yossi against other Tanoim, the halacha is like Rav Yossi, and here also, since the Gemara is saying that Rav Chanina follows him, and the Gemara has spent a considerable amount of time discussing Rav Chanina's opinion, therefore the halacha ends up being like Rav Chanina. As long as it's ktsuvin, as long as it's fixed in value, then you can collect from the chosim mishabadim. Apparently, even if it's not ktsuvin, even if it's not actually written. Yeah. Okay. Next.
Well, that because it's a curl. Because
so the point is, because once it's ktsuvin, then there's more of a curl. Yeah.
Ktsuvin
means it's a fixed. It's a known value. Yeah. So other people know to be aware of that. Yeah. Okay, we said in the Mishnah, the next piece, we said if a person finds a lost object, we don't make him swear because then it'll make it hard for the other person is going to claim that you found a much larger amount, and we don't want that because then people aren't going to want to bother returning lost objects. Did I mention the other day that story of the pirates? And yeah, I mentioned that. Yeah. So Amar Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak says in this connection, Shnei kisin kshurin matzasali. Suppose that Reuven says you must have found two purses of mine, two money bags of mine together that were tied together. And the other one says I found only one. So then Nishba, then Rabbi Yitzchak says, the finder would have to swear because he's a Moedim Mitzas. Now, you have a big machlokas, Rishonim over here. Are we talking about where Reuven is saying definitively you found two of them? Or are we talking about that he's saying you must have found two of them, But he didn't actually see it, or he doesn't have eidos to the effect that he actually found the both of them at the same time. So Rashi implies that we're talking about that he didn't actually see him pick it up, or he doesn't have eidim to that effect. He's saying based on the fact that you have only one, then therefore I assume you must have found both of them because they were tied together. On the other hand, the Ramban, the Rashba disagree with that and say that in that case he would have a migri. Actually, he could have said that he could have said I didn't find anything at all.
He's coming to say I found it,
but he still could have said he could have had a migri and said I didn't find it at all. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered a modim mitzas. So they say what we're talking about is he knows. They go on to explain. Now there is an opinion of the Rimi Gash, one of the great Rishonim, who says that you don't say migri to be potter from a shrua. Migri potters you from payment, but not from a shrua. And then in turn you have various explanations of why that is so. Anyway, So, but the Rishonim explained that the case could be over here where Reuven says, "You, I know for a fact that you picked up both of them because, for example, I saw you pick them both up, or I have edim to that effect, or whatever." So you have a big machlokas. You have a big machlokas Rishonim on that point, whether we what exactly the scenario is. The Marshal over here, in fact, talks about this at some length. He refers to this machlokas Rishonim. And discusses it at some length. He explains like many of the Rishonim that we're talking about that Reuven is claiming Bori. He's claiming I'm certain that you picked up both of them, and really therefore we should consider Shimon, who's saying I found only one of them. We should consider him Moed Mitzas, but Mipnei Tikkun Olam, we're not going to make him responsible to swear, because then he wouldn't bother at all. And he goes on to discuss all of this in some detail. So Rabbi Yitzchok is saying again that if he says you found two, and then the other one says I found only one, nishba, then he would have to swear. Again, according to Rashi and somebody showing him, we're talking about even where it's only a tainas shema. He's saying maybe you found both of them. And according to many of the Rishonim, we're saying only when it's a tainas bori, only when he's saying for sure that you had to have found both of them because both of them were tied together.
Well, keep saying, like, I don't know if it's like what's making him when it mixes. If he's just saying, yeah, I found this. Oh, you're gonna.
Yeah, but the two of them were tied together. If you found one, you must have. So that's the point. In other words, that's the question. That's the discussion among the Rishonim. Are we talking about that the owner has a vaday claim or a suffet claim? The Baal HaMor, for example, points out you have the expression hamoitzim mitziya lo yishava rather than hameshiv mitziya lo yishava. So we're talking about that. He says you'd see from that lashon hamoitzim mitziya, you're talking about the other guy has a vade claim against him, and really we should consider him a moed mitzas, but because mipnei tikkun olam, we don't make him swear. On the other hand, again, Rabbi Yitzchok is saying that he does swear, and the Gemara is going to ask what happened to Tikkun Olam. We're going to get to that soon.
Tikkun Olam doesn't pop you from a...
From a Shavua, fine. No, that's the question still would be. Migui doesn't pop to you from Shavua, according to the Rimigash. Tikkun Olam, the whole point is we don't want to discourage people from returning. Anyway, that's according to the Baal HaMor. Again, you have different other Rishonim who disagree with that and say that we're talking about even where the owner has a tainas, that's where the owner has a tainas shem. Anyway, so Rabbi Yitzchok is saying nishba. On the other hand, Rabbi Yitzchok contrasts if Reuven says shnei shvorim kshurim atzosali. If he says you must have found two oxen of mine that were tied together, and Shimon says it was only one, then Rabbi Yitzchok says he wouldn't have to swear. My timer, shvorim natchim adori. Exactly, because oxen, even if they're tied together, they can pull apart, and pretty soon you'll have only one of them separate from the other. Kisin lemi natchim adori, as opposed to money bags, don't pull apart from each other. And therefore, there's no reason. Therefore, yes, if he found one, it's more likely that he found the other one as well. Tosfos points out, you do have a Gemara elsewhere that implies that even when you have two money bags tied together, you could have the string between them breaks, the knot between them breaks. But the difference is, so Tosfos says, the difference is that there, we're talking about a case where we know to begin with he left 200 and now he found only 100. Here, Tosfos is saying, how do you know that he ever Bechlal found both of them? Again, Tosfos apparently is learning similar to Rashi that we're talking about. There's a tiny Shema over here. We don't know for sure that he found both of them. We're just assuming. So the Meiri points out anyway, it's not so common that the string should break. It could happen, but it's much less common than with animals, where for sure they're gonna pull apart. Now says Rabbi Yitzchok, another case, Shnei Shvarin Kshur Matsasa. If Reuven says you found two oxen that were tied together, and Shimon says, yes, I did find both of them, but I returned you one of them, hareza nishba, then he would have to swear, because then he's a moedim mitzas. So there, you're talking about that it's a tainas vadai. So therefore, Rashi points out, by the way, that there was a girse in front of him which said Tani Nami Hochi, which said that this last piece was actually a braisa rather than part of Rabbi Yitzchok's statement. Rashi says we don't have that girse, and that's why in the printed Gemara, usually when the printers tended to follow Rashi's girse, the file copyists before them that the printers took their version from, usually tended to follow Rashi, and that's why we don't have Tani Nami Hochi in the Gemara. Tosfos keeps that in and says that because after all, in that case, wouldn't you have a migui? So Tosfos discusses over here and says that no, it's actually Tanya Nami Hachi, and we can explain that there are reasons why a migui wouldn't apply in this case. Anyway, so the question is, does Rabbi Yitzchok not hold of this concept of that if you find something, you shouldn't swear because of Tikkun Olam? So why are we making, in the case of the two money bags, why are we making him swear? Wouldn't that discourage people from returning things at all? And the answer is Huda Amak Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The answer is that Rabbi Yitzchak in that is following not our Mishnah, he's following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that when you have a tainus bori against a person, then he has to swear even when he's a Meshav Aveda. So our Mishnah was saying Meshav Aveda is potter even by tainus bori mipnei tikkun olam. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov disagrees with that concept. The Tanya, and we're going to learn a braisa, and we're going to discuss it at some length. And once we fully understand Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, then we'll see that it fits with what Rabbi Yitzchak is saying. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Omer, Pa'omim Sha'adam Nishma Al Tainas Atzma. Tosfos, by the way, explains the question is a little bit different. Well, actually, it'll be on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Wait. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Omer, there can be a case, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, where a person swears based on a claim of his own. In other words, that we're talking on the face of it, it sounds like nobody came with an argument against him in the first place. He voluntarily came to Beis Din and said something, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying he's going to have to swear about it. We're going to see in a minute what exactly that means. So Kate said, what's the scenario, says Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Somebody says to somebody else, Mona la avicha b'yadi. So Reuven says to Shimon, your father, I owed your father a money, v'hachaltiv pras, and I already gave him pras, which is a half a money. So in other words, Reuven is saying to one of Shimon's sons, here you have in the Pesukim, you have Shimon has in this week's parasha, Nemuel, Yomin, etc. There's a few. So he says to Nemuel, he says, I previously borrowed money from your father Shimon. I borrowed a money from him. I paid him back half of it. And now your father has passed away, and I'm informing you that I still owe him half the debt. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying, in that case, Reuven would have to swear. There is an example where he's swearing based on his own claim, even though on the face of it, we're talking about that Nemuel never came to him to begin with this claim, but nevertheless, yeah. He's returning a lost object, because how would Nemuel have known that the money was owed to his father? So therefore, we consider Reuven a Meshav Aveda, and therefore he's potter from swearing. The pastors we're talking about, it wasn't written down. If it was written down, obviously that's something else. So the question is, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov lesley meshav aveda potter. So doesn't Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov hold of meshav aveda potter because of tikkun olam? Granted, he's a Tana. He could argue with our Mishnah, but we would assume that the takonis of tikkun olam that we're saying in our Mishnayos over here, we're assuming that all the chachamim agree to that. Tosfos actually explains the question is a little bit different. For one thing, Tosfos says, before when we asked on Rabbi Yitzchak, we said, here the Gemara is using a different expression. So rather, Tosfos says the question is, why don't we say according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that he has a migui? He didn't have to say anything. He voluntarily goes to Nemuel and tells him that he's chay of him, that he's chay of him or his father, whatever, a half a mana. He could have not said anything, and Nemuel wouldn't have known to come after him. Why shouldn't we give him a migui and say, so why does he have to swear? Why shouldn't we take him at his word to say that he's chay of only the 50? Omar Rab Toyne Cotton. So Rav says, we're not talking about where there was no claim at all. We're talking about when Nemuel came to claim from Reuven, he was actually a cotton at the time. So the Gemara asks, "Katan midi mashasha ispe." So what if a katan makes a claim? Do we have? Is there any mamoshus to it? How could that bring a person to swear, even according to Rabbi Elazar and Yaakov? But tanan, we learn in a Mishnah in Shavuos, in Nishbo, in Altanus Cheder Shoyt of a katan. You don't swear if a Cheder Shoyt of a katan come with a claim against you in Beis Din, then Beis Din doesn't make you swear. And the answer is my katan gadol. For this purpose, when we say a cotton, we mean that he's already an adult, right? Well, he already grew up. By my cotton, like cotton, we had this concept the other day. Why is he called a cotton? Because relative to what his father's business affairs, he's considered a cotton because he doesn't really know everything that was going on. So at the time, maybe he was a cotton, whatever. In fact, Tosfos says the reason why we're also trying to end for Rav over here. Rav is saying betone cotton. The fact is, Rav is saying betone cotton, and we know there's a Mishnah that says to the contrary. And in fact, Tosfos says there is another Mishnah in Shavuos that says there are cases where you swear for a cotton. So therefore, the Gemara didn't just want to say flat out that we're talking about a gadol and completely contradict Rav and make it sound as though Rav didn't know those Mishnayos. So therefore, the Gemara is saying Rav's expression cotton, he himself really means a gadol, but he's called cotton for this purpose. So the Gemara says, "Ihochi Tainus Atzmai." Then why is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov calling it Tainus Atzmai? What are you saying? Amim Shadim Nishma Al Tainus Atzmai. Sometimes it happens a person is swearing based on a claim that he himself made. If a gadol was coming against him in Beis Din, it's on Tainus Atzmai. Tainus Achedim, then it's a claim by somebody else. So why is he calling it Tainus Atzmai? And the answer is okay. Tainus Achedim Boydas Atzmai. It means somebody else is making the claim. Nemuel was saying that. Is saying that you owe my father money, that you owe my father 100 zuz, and he's counterclaiming and saying I already paid 50 of it. So he's admitting tax. So Gemara says, so what? Kulutan also nami tainas achirim voidas atzmininu. Every taina in Beis Din, every murder mitzvah is like that, where Reuven is claiming, where one person is claiming one thing and the other counterclaims something else. So why is Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov calling it Tainus Atzmai? And why would he be saying that he swears? And the Chum, why would the Chum say he's potter? Because Meshur Aveda, if the other guy is making a claim, then it's not Meshur Aveda anymore. So Ela b'derabba kamifti. So the answer is that no, we're going to go back to our original answer. We are in fact talking about, as Rab said, that the one who's claiming, that Nemuel, who's making the claim against him, is actually a cotton. We said before that you don't swear on Tainus cotton. The difference is in this case, it's something different. The machloikas is between Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim is based on the svara that Rabbi said. Which we're going to learn now. So that's how Rashi learns, in other words, that we are talking about the Gemara is going back to the answer of Toyane Cotton, and we're saying where he's coming with his own claim, then you don't have to swear, but where he's coming, where a taina based on that you owed money to my father, then we would say that, according to the Chachamim, that he does have to swear. Tosfos points out then that in that case, Ikur Chosim and Asefer, the Gemara is going to explain the Svara of Rabbah, why a person and why a Modim Mixus in general has to swear, but the Gemara doesn't say anything. The Gemara's answer is not going to mention anything about himself versus his father. So instead, Tosfos is saying what it means is the Gemara wants to answer when we said why you're calling it Tainus Atzmai. If it's Tainus Achirim, the answer is we're calling it Tainus Atzmai because since it involves the son, then therefore, according to one way of understanding Rabbi's Svara, we would say he could have denied the whole thing, and since he doesn't, then therefore the Chachamim are going to consider him Meshur Aveda, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will still not. Anyway. So what does Rabbah say? Why does the Torah say that a modem mitzvah should have to swear? Why shouldn't we, for example, why shouldn't we give him migri that he could have said that he doesn't owe anything at all? So chazaka ain't on a meis ponav mipnei bal choive, because the chazaka that a person does not have the chutzpah in front of his bal choive to say I don't owe you anything at all. Rashi says because the guy did him a favor. Tosfos says not necessarily because he did him a favor, because the same din applies to a pekodin as well. It's rather he wouldn't have the chutzpah to say something that the other person knows is blatantly untrue. So that's what Gemara is going to say. Wait. So therefore, a chazaka, he wouldn't be so meyaz upon him, and therefore we're not going to make him swear daraisa. Therefore, when he's moedim mitzvahs, then so what happens? V'hai b'kulei boilim michbarele, he would have liked to deny the whole thing. V'hai like kafri mishum ne'enon meyaz upon him, but he doesn't because of this chazaka of ne'enon meyaz upon him. So the Truma Sadeshin, by the way, points out, he says, so why does Rabbi have to repeat that part? Why didn't he chazoka in on a maze part of Mufnei Baal Chayve? And then get to, so why isn't he admitting the whole thing? Why does he first start by saying this line that he would have liked to deny the whole thing, but he won't because of the chazoka? And so he explains that the vort is that you would have thought without that, maybe we mean this is a really strong chazoka. So then in that case, we would say that that would apply to a kofar hakel, that we don't even need a posik to tell us that a kofar hakel is posik. It does not have to swear. So therefore, we're saying it's not really, we don't mean it's such a strong chazaka. By repeating it, he's saying, really, he would have liked to deny it. Chazaka, in an amazed pun of, so therefore he won't, but we don't mean it's such a strong chazaka. We mean it's a likelihood. Anyway, and then Rabbah continues, on the other hand, he would have liked to admit the whole thing. Why is he denying half of it? The reason he doesn't, ishtamuti ho to come ishtamit, because he's trying to evade it for the time being. He figures, ad to have li zuzi, pardain alay, when I have the money, then I'll pay him. But right now, I don't want to be on the hook for the whole thing. So the Omer Rachmana, so the Torah says, Romi Shvu'al Ilavei, impose a Shvu'a on him that he owes only 50, ki heifi deloi delei b'kulei, that way he will admit to the whole thing, and then they can work out terms for when he's going to pay. So that's the idea why a Moed B'mitzas is Chayiv in a Shvu'a, says Rabbah. So now that we have that Svara, now Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim are disagreeing how to apply that Svara in this case over here, where we're saying that the son of that Shimon's son came with a claim and said that you owe my father money. Again, according to Rashi, the scenario would be that the son is actually coming as a katan. And according to Tosfos, not necessarily, we're saying that he's coming as a gadol, but still, why are we calling it tainus atzmus? So like this, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Sofer, loishna b'noi, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether it's him or his son. Either way, he's not going to have the chutzpah, according to Rashi, because the guy did him a favor, and according to Tosfos, because the other guy knows the truth. So therefore, ene meyes, he won't be chutzpah to deny the whole thing. So we can't call him a meshav aveda, because he wouldn't have even had the option of denying the whole thing because of Rabbah's chazaka. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, even when he's claiming as a cotton with the claim, according to Rashi, or even when it's a gadol coming with the claim, according to Tosfos, and we're saying that when we're calling it tainus atzmai, it's not really tainus atzmai because you really have somebody else claiming against him, and he wouldn't have the chutzpah to deny it. Therefore, he doesn't really have the option mentally of denying the whole thing, and therefore he says you can't consider him a meshav aveda. Therefore, he has to swear. The Chum would say, "Boy, who da ain't a mayor? Sure, he wouldn't be mayor against the person himself, against Shimon. Alva b'bnoi mayor, but he would be mayor against his son. Umi de le mayor, meishu avedahu. And since he did not, therefore we can call him a meishu aveda. And therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov would say, the Chachamim would say that therefore the Chacham would say, since he's a Meshav Aveda, then you have the usual rule of Meshav Aveda, who's potter because of Tikkun HaOlam, or as Tosfos said earlier, because of a Migri, because he could have denied the whole thing.
Oh, so he gets away with it.
So here we said to the Chacham saying, Ein Elok Meshav Aveda, or potter, yeah. Because we're talking about the son. Again, according to Rashi, the son is coming as a cotton with the claim, and according to Tosfos, he's coming as a gadol, but we're still calling it Tainus Atzmai, because again, he doesn't necessarily know all of his father's business affairs. Anyway, now that we understand that point, so now that we understand what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is talking about, so you have a there is a claimant And it's not a completely vadai claim, because after all, it's the son making the claim and saying, you owe my father the money, and he doesn't know for sure whether it was paid back. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is requiring the other guy to swear and does not consider him a Mesher Aveda. So now, getting back to the Yitzchak's case at the bottom of the previous Amud, when Reuven is saying, you found two money bags of mine tied together, and Shimon is saying, no, I found only one. So the same thing, we'd be talking about that it's not, we'd still be saying that Reb Yitzchak is going to make him swear. Now, it's true in our Mishnah, we would say that, it's true in our Mishnah, we say, Mipnei Tikkun Olam, you don't, but Reb Elazar ben Yaakov and Reb Yitzchak are both saying that there are certain kinds of claims where you don't say that and you still say he has to swear. Only where the claim is a complete Shema, then you would say he doesn't have to swear. And Reb Elazar ben Yaakov and Reb Yitzchak, respectively, in their cases, don't consider it as that, and therefore they say he would have to swear.
Yes, I'm about to ask him in a way to where he's sort of putting where he's, the way you ask it.
Not just the way you ask, but the way you say it, yeah. Okay. Shukriya, everyone.